Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. I am your host, Beam Weeks. This is episode number 95. We are getting closer and closer to that magical number 100 show. Big time celebration that night. With me is my co-host, Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm nifty keen. It's we're approaching Memorial Day weekend next week here in the U.S., which means it's officially spring, summer, listen to the frogs time, especially in Alabama.
Ooh. All right. So what do you got on the roster here?
I saw a whistling duck this morning with 12 babies behind it.
Wow.
I don't know what that thing's been doing, but we set up a GoFundMe account today for Fresh Ink Group author and member Dr. Helen Burrell. She's been fighting cancer and has been fighting pneumonia as well, and she's a shut-in, so she has to try to get medical care that comes to her in New York City, and she's been doing these IV treatments that are $1,200 a piece and basically has wiped out her savings. So we set up a GoFundMe, and anybody who's interested in helping out with Dr. Helen Burrell's medical expenses, head over there to GoFundMe. We'll put the link out there on social media. We'll put it on our pages. And in next week's newsletter, we'll have the link for you as well. So we wish you the best, Dr. Helen. We need you to get better.
Yes, indeed.
I also want to announce that Ingram has announced yet another price increase on its printing, approximately 6% in the U.S., which is quite a big jump, especially since they've had several jumps over the last couple of years. So print prices are definitely going up. Those of you who have very thin margins in your royalties might want to consider your cover pricing. At Fresh Ink Group, the books that we publish, we tend to have a nice margin in there for our authors. So a few percent's really not going to make a big significant difference. But there is a big difference this time, too. This is the first time I've ever seen Ingram do this. And when I say Ingram, I'm talking about Ingram, all of its companies, Lightning Source, Ingram Spark, the print-on-demand factories, any program that you go through that's related to Ingram is going to be affected by this. They are now setting the minimum wholesale discount at 30%. Used to be 25%. So you could price a book with a 25% discount and 75% revenue. Now, for all new books, we don't have to make any changes to previously published books, but all new books, that has to be a minimum of 30%. That's going to affect pricing structures a little bit too. We're going to have to raise prices a little bit to cover the print price increase. Plus, those who are used to doing the 25% discount are going to have to cover a 30% discount now too. So the economics of print publishing are changing, and Ingram, which is the biggest gorilla in the gorilla house, is setting the pace. And right now things are going up.
Indeed. Just a reminder, out now is Eerie Charms of the Short Story by Patricia A. Guthrie. That is available at all those book retail outlets where you buy your books. So get out there and grab a copy and get over to the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel and check out the video for that. It's up and it's on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel. And while you're over there, be sure to hit the like button, subscribe if you haven't already, and help us out. Help us grow this thing.
Fresh Ink Group author and member Kenneth Lindquist is now out of rehab. He had seriously injured both of his legs, had surgery, and then had to do 3 weeks in a rehab facility. He's out now. We're back on track to getting his books out in the next couple of weeks. He's the one that's putting out two books on how to teach driving, and one's for instructors, people who want to become certified instructors in whatever area they work in. and one for parents to help young adults and teenagers learn how to be better drivers. So congratulations, Kenneth. We're glad your recovery is moving along. We're looking forward to getting those books out. We got a bunch of other books in the works, too. Sometime in the next couple of weeks, we're looking at releasing a book of 10 plays by J. Ash Looney called Practical Problems. We've got The Calling Dream, the republished version of it by Carlisle Toms, is just about ready. Water Lilies, we're refining the cover right now. That's Water Lilies Over My Grave by Patricia A. Guthrie. So that one we're shooting for a couple of weeks from now. The third book in the Chair series by Robert McKenzie is coming out soon. And right now Beam is editing a book by Andrew McGregor, a new Fresh Ink Group member author who's invested in an artist from Pixar. And actually an illustrator from Pixar to do artwork for his cover. So he's got a very cool cover coming on that one, too. And that's just a few in the works. What else is going on, Beam?
We've also got the sequel to B.A. Johnson's Sassy Discovers the AME Church. That's in progress. That'll be out soon. We got novels coming out by Josh Frederick, Ronnie DeShay, short story showcase, Fresh Ink Group short story showcase, that should be coming out here before too long. Dr. Joshi,
that's he's Joshi. Actually got two books. One is about what's going on. He's a doctor who lost his license and went to prison over opioid prescribing, and he was talked about quite a bit in Dr. Helen Burrell's book. He's written his own book, and it's an excellent book. He also has a children's book that he wrote for his son while he was in prison because he couldn't be there for his little boy's birthday. So we're going to publish them both.
Cool. Yeah, Tom Reach and Janelle Jordan, Janice Toney, Dick Ferrer. Dick Ferrer is the gentleman that wrote and published his book on the construction company that his father and two guys had put together and built into this big empire only to watch it collapse and go out of existence. He's got a new one coming out too. So, and then 10 more books that we've got. We got 5 audio books in progress. We are busy, busy, busy. So, just keep an eye on the newsletter and, keep listening to this show. We've also got the Ort Federation to the Stars by Robert G. Willis-Croft, that's out. Go over and check the video for that, the book trailer on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel. And we've got the audiobook. We're working on that audiobook. That's coming real soon because we're nearing the end on that one. We're
last
in the final
chapter.
Stages. Yeah, the final stages of that one, and it's another cool one, so check it out. And then we've got coming soon by Submariner Jerry Pate. That's a book. I believe he's a former submariner, Stephen.
Yeah, the book's going to be called Submariner. He's a Navy, a former Navy captain, I believe it was. And
okay.
Willis-Croft is assisting him putting together his 60 true tales about what happened in the high seas and the fun that they had.
Yeah. Now, listeners, if you want to be a part of tonight's show, if you have a question or comment for tonight's guest, you can do it one of two ways, and here's how you can do both of them.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Be there.
All right. So I went over and had a look at what's going on with the print sales, and let's work our way up from the number 5 slot. It seems like virtually every week we have a Robert G. Willis-Croft book, but we can never predict which book it's going to be. This week in the number 5 slot, it's his latest book, The Ort Federation, To the Stars, The Second Ort Chronicle, which is the sequel to Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Ort Chronicle. Excellent sci-fi series. Second book is out now. He's working on the third book, and he has come in at number 5. Number 4 and 2 are the hardcover and softcover editions of How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida. In the number 3 slot, again, much to my surprise, I've said this before, The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction. That's by Dick Farrer Jr., who Beam was just talking about there. He's got his book in the number three slot. And then number one, I mentioned this last week, right out of the blue, a book that we have not really done any promoting for or anything lately. The author has passed away. We are retooling his website and getting ready to gear up to do some more marketing. But in the meantime, somehow people have discovered Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, third edition, by Dr. Marshall L. Shearer, MD, and his wife, Marguerite R. Shearer, MD. And that book last week had sold enough units that it was more than the other four slots in the list combined. And that number has gone up even more this week. So wow. Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication. It's a great relationship book. It was used in counseling sessions. It was used in couples therapy. And it was purchased by quite a few individuals who just wanted to learn how to have better relationships, solve problems, or just find some maximizing their happiness.
All right. And just a little programming note here. I'm going to be the guest on Meet the Author, the Meet the Author podcast with Rob and Joan Carter next week. It'll be on Wednesday night. It'll be the hour before this show. So I'm going to jump from that podcast onto this one. And hopefully everything goes seamless. But watch the newsletter for this, for the link, and as well as for all their podcasts, because we are going to start promoting their podcast in our newsletter each week, because they have some really cool guests. And sometimes we cross-promote stuff, and this is how we're going to try to build a podcast network, so to speak, to where bringing in other podcasters that we get some of their guests, they get some of our guests, and just kind of spread it around and maybe we can build something that helps a lot of indie authors and indie musicians and indie artists of all sorts. So keep an eye out for that in the newsletter coming up next week.
Yeah. The Carters, keep in mind, too, sometimes they have better guests than we do. So, you know, we get a little bit jealous. Case in point, next week, our guest is me. I mean, how lame is that? We couldn't do any better than that. But next week, since Beam is going to be wrapped up in the Meet the Author podcast, and he normally runs the studio, so he's got to try to get over and get things happening kind of all at the same time, we're going to make it a little bit easy on him, and I'm going to take the lead on next week's podcast. We did Point of View featuring me 4 or 5 months ago, something like that, and right now it's in our top three, I believe, if not number one, most listened to podcasts in the archives. It got a lot of response, which kind of surprised me a little bit. We did not get to do very much in it. We just basically talked about what is Point of View and a couple of the basic little conventions and how it works. We took a few phone calls, and then we ran out of time. So next week, we're going to pick it up where we left off, and we're going to try to get into a little bit more advanced stuff. Now, it'd be great if people would call in and ask questions, and then I can act like I know what I'm talking about. It would also be great if you'd post some questions on Twitter, hashtag Fresh Ink Group, put them in there. And if you're interested and want to be part of that discussion, want to learn more about Point of View, I'm going to suggest you get on over to Amazon, G's Writer, How To, Point of View. It's like 99 cents or $1.99, something like that. Get your hands on that and go through that thing. Look at some of the exercises in there and some of the examples and stuff. And then when we talk about them on the show next week, you'll have a leg up, not to use a cliche. So that's a Point of View next week featuring, couldn't get anybody else on the show, so it's me. Point of View next week, June 1st. And Beam will still be here, but he'll be a little harried because after the Carters get through beating him up, we don't know what kind of shape he'll be in.
Yeah, broken nose, missing teeth.
Yeah.
Here. As we keep mentioning through here, we've got a newsletter, and this newsletter puts you up on everything that's going on with this podcast, as well as book releases, website, and just a lot of cool stuff. So here's how you can go over and subscribe to our newsletter.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right. We had an interesting topic come up this week. Sometime in a recent podcast, one of our callers, a poltergeist, we don't know, talked about a book called Catastrophica, Departure of the Lords, and that book was free. It's by Trevor Daffett. I'm looking at it right now on Amazon.
I think it was an EVP.
Yeah, the Kindle edition is free. Paperback's only $4.23. But Fresh Ink Group author and member Robert G. Williscroft grabbed a copy of that and read it and thought it was terrific and posted a great review on it. Get over there and check out his review on Amazon or Goodreads. And you might want to check out that book, too. The funny thing is, neither Beam nor I can remember who brought that book up and talked about it. So if anybody does, I'll tell you what, if you could tell us which episode it is and who talked about it, I'll send you a free book. Just let us
know. There you go.
But that's Catastrophica, Departure of the Lords by Trevor Daffett, highly recommended by Robert G. Williscroft and whoever on the show talked about it before.
Okay, now how to start and run a food truck business in Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. That website is coming soon. In fact, we're supposed to get with our guy in India tonight and go over some things that need to be addressed on that. But keep an eye out for that. Speaking of the POV.
Before you go on that, just to clarify, the book is How to Start and Run a Food Truck and Business in Florida. Georgia and Tennessee are the next two books that are going to be coming out in the series. In fact, it'll probably be Tennessee next and then Georgia about a week after that.
Yeah, and now we had mentioned that next week Stephen will be doing part two of the Point of View kind of, I guess, master class, if you will. If you want to catch part one, if you missed that one, you can go over to our archives and find it. It'll be just scroll down through there and you'll find it. This is how you find all these old episodes, the past episodes, if you missed one or if you just want to hear one for a second time or a third time or a tenth time. Here's the archives. Here's how you can find them.
If you miss a show, find us in the archives in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
All right. So we're going to roll our first commercial and then introduce our guests. This commercial is Learning About Autism, which is going to be a rerun show in 2 weeks featuring Karen Ingalls and the late Carol Tucker.
Learning About Autism, one mother's journey of discovery and love, a charter school, teaching methods, and resources is the book millions of families must have. Carol Tucker travels the road of autism and cerebral palsy with her adopted son, Justin, now a young man who routinely astounds physicians with his achievements. She is a special education teacher, recognized leader in children's advocacy, and one of the founders of Florida's first charter school for autism, where she served as director. Through photos and stories, best-selling author Karen Ingalls shares Carol's journey, then offers a wealth of resources, teaching methods, school choices, and financial assistance options. With Karen's unique insight, Learning About Autism shows how one very determined mother and her family can rise above daunting challenges to thrive and find happiness. Learning About Autism is published worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions.
All right. Fantastic.
Our guest this week is Jason Gwynn. Jason Gwynn lives in Dallas, Texas with his wife and two kids. Threshold is his second novel. His first is the devilishly dark supernatural comedy, The Wretched, through Burning Bulb Publications. Say that five times fast. Burning Bulb, which has sold more than 6,000 copies, and a short story called The Fallen, which managed to get up to number 11 on Amazon.
Wow.
Welcome to the show, Jason.
Welcome, Jay.
Thanks, guys. Really happy to be here. I appreciate it.
So we have discerned that you are from Dallas, Texas, or you live in Dallas, Texas. Where are you originally from? Where have you lived? And what brought you to Dallas if you're not from Dallas?
Okay, sure. Yeah, originally I'm from Indiana, so from the Midwest. Spent a lot of time there growing up, but my dad was in the military, so we moved a lot. So I've lived in Germany, and as a kid, after I moved here to Killeen, Texas.
You there?
Did we lose him? Is his call still showing?
Yeah, his call is still showing. I think we just, you know, cell reception maybe. Hello, Jason. Well, while we're waiting and see if he comes back on, I see Verwayne Greenhow on Twitter. He said, I bought that book, Stephen G's. He's talking about the Point of View book. And Marlena Smith said, I love hearing all those familiar names coming out with new books. Congrats to all the authors. All right. Fantastic.
Hello?
Hello. You there, Jason?
Jason?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Just
bad cell reception?
It might be. We've been having some bad weather blow through.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, we got storms blowing through here, too. If you do get cut off, just call us back right away, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I hear you. Thank you.
Or if we're screaming at you and we're obviously not hearing you, you know, it might be worth just hanging up and redialing.
Hanging up and calling, yeah.
Okay.
So, basically, we didn't get much of, you know, we got that you lived in Germany and Indiana, and I believe you said you had Killeen, Texas?
Yeah, I lived in Killeen, Texas, just, I think, for 4 years before moving back to Indiana. And then after university, I moved to China, where I lived there for about 14 years. And then you asked, like, why did I come back to Texas? Well, originally, I wanted to go to Chicago because I love that city. Great food, great music. But my wife hates the snow. So she picked Texas, and I'm like, all right, yeah, that's.
Can we lose you again?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah. What did your wife say?
Well, she asked me, does it snow a lot in Chicago? And I said, a little bit. And she was like, nah, I don't want to live in Chicago. So we ended up moving to Texas.
All right.
So where are you in Texas? Like out in the suburbs around the Dallas area or in the city?
I'm in North Dallas, Allen, Texas.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a few miles from where Ann Stewart, our original managing director, used to live before she passed away. So what kind of kid were you, Jason? Were you into reading and writing as a kid, or is that something that you got your interest later on?
It struck me pretty early on just because I have asthma, and as a young kid, I didn't have, like, the ability to go out and play like everybody else did. And my brother was a sporty guy, so I had to do something to entertain myself and try to get recognized by my parents. You know, here's my talent, love me, you know. and my mom was a big reader, and so I started writing stories, and then I just kind of fell in love with it. And I started writing quite regularly, probably by age 9 or 10. I wrote my first, I'm using air quotes, you know, book when I was 12. And it's just something that I always love to do. I love to share my work, originally just for friends and family and watching the entertainment from it. And it just kind of inspired me to keep pursuing this dream. And, of course, a big reader. I love Stephen King, Koontz, you know, Douglas Adams. My favorite is Kurt Vonnegut. I'm a very avid reader. As a kid, I was a big horror nerd, and I had a mullet. Don't judge me. And a big metal fan and played Dungeons & Dragons. So if any of my friends do have to call in, they will verify with you that I was a big nerd. I'm a proud nerd.
Do you still have the book you wrote when you were 12?
Oh, I wish I did. I found one book I wrote in high school in 94. I found that, and I still have it. But some of my earlier works, no, sadly.
That's too bad. Yeah, our Fresh Ink group member, Ellie Collins, was writing her second novel at age 12. So, you know, you're a late bloomer, but that's all right.
At least I bloomed.
Yes. Now, I'm kind of curious. What took you to China for 14 years?
Well, my senior year of university, most of my friends were a year older than me at college, so they all graduated and moved on. So I was kind of there by myself. And at that time, I kind of fell in love with kung fu fantasy films, you know, like Jet Li, Chow Yun-fat, Stephen Zhou, Andy Lau. And I just thought, wow, China looks so amazing. I really want to go check it out. And so my senior year, you get this year, I just really bad. Indiana winter, you know, it's dark and dreary and cold. And I just decided I'm going. As soon as I finish school, I'm leaving this country. I know I don't know the language or anything, but if I don't go now, I'll probably never go. So I finished up, I got a ticket, and I flew to China. Of course, met a woman. my uncle told me right before I left for China, he's like, you're going there single, but you're going to come back married. And I was like, that's not me. No. And sure enough, that's what happens.
Cool.
That's fantastic.
What's her name?
All right.
Her name is Ting Ting, or Ting Ju.
Oh, that's a pretty
cool
name.
Yeah, she wanted me to give her an English name, but I'm like, why? You know, love your name. I love your name. So I always just call her Ting Ting.
Now, you spoke about, you know, your college experience. So where'd you go to college and, you know, what were you studying?
Okay. Yeah, I went to Ball State University, which is in northern Indiana, in a place called Muncie.
Mm.
I was one of those kids who followed their dreams, you know. Oh, I'm going to be a famous author by the time I finish school and be like Stephen King. I'll be a bestseller. Everybody's going to know me. And I'm 44, still nobody knows me except a small group of people. But, yeah, so I went there, majored in creative writing and education, and, you know, developed my craft and still developing even now at this age. But, yeah, it was just something I always wanted to do, was just follow the dream. And I got admitted into Purdue at the same time. And, you know, they're more of a science school and stuff. And so the smart move would have been to go to Purdue, get a good degree to pay for my writing. But I went to the other school to write to hopefully pay for my dream. And it just never worked out, you know. But I'm happy and, you know, still writing and everything. But it's just, in hindsight, I should have picked a different major, you know.
Yeah. Well, over on Twitter, we've got some comments. Marlena Smith says, I love hearing all those familiar names coming out with new books. Congratulations to all the authors. Yeah, but those names are starting to become a little familiar, aren't they, Marlena? We're looking forward to your next one, too, Marlena. For Wayne Greenhoe says, at Fresh Ink Group, I bought that book. I loved it. He's talking about the Catastrophica. And Joe Congel says, hi, Jason. Who is your favorite writer? And was he or she the inspiration for your writing horror? If so, why? If not, why? Thanks.
Wow, that's a good question. Thank you for that, first of all. I think the writer that influenced me most at a young age was an author from Britain named Clive Barker. He writes...
I'm a huge Clive Barker fan.
Oh, awesome. But, you know, back in the 80s, he was called the Prince of Horror. But if you read a lot of his books, it's more dark fantasy.
Yeah,
than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever read, and I've read a lot of different authors, but I don't think I've ever read anyone who masters the language as powerfully as he does. You know, you can read a passage of a book that he wrote and feel it, and it's just amazing. So he was one of my biggest inspirations. Hellraiser is probably one of my favorite horror franchises. You know, if you forget the straight-to-video ones, of course, but
yeah.
He was just a huge inspiration. So I would say Clive Barker is probably the biggest one, and probably running in a close second would be Kurt Vonnegut, who I just love his dark cynicism and his humor and his style. So when I'm writing, I try not, you know, as writers, sometimes you emulate what you read, but I try not to, but I'd say those two are my biggest influences and inspirations of becoming a writer.
Cool. Great. You want to run a commercial and then take our first caller, Beam?
Sure thing.
A small rural community in the Lowcountry along Ocean Highway Green Pine, South Carolina, has long lacked cultural and educational opportunities for its young people's future success. Many have gone on to serve in the highest levels of education, government, public service, elected office, business, and medicine. With so much success against the odds, surely there must be something in the water. Abigail Hugini chronicles the impact just 42 of Green Pond's children have gone on to make in the world
All full-color editions include photos from around town and local translations of down-home Spain. These inspirational stories prove that, regardless of one's background, we can all find our own path toward greatness. An excellent reference, keepsake, gift, and addition to every library. There must be something in the water. Anthology of the fourth generation, Descendants of Green Pond, after the Emancipation, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
Okay, we apparently lost our caller, so we're not going to the caller.
Hmm.
Call back.
Well, yeah. We hope the person calls back.
Yes, we do. All right, so current day job. What are you doing these days to earn a buck?
Well, I just am in the process of changing jobs, so I'm pretty happy about that. But I'm about to become an e-comms training manager, and I will be basically revamping the entire training program for this company that I'm going to, and I'm pretty excited for it to get back into the management. It's taken a little bit of time transitioning from overseas back to the U.S. because, you know, they always say, oh, your experience doesn't matter because you weren't in America. So it's just a slow rebuilding and rebranding of myself. So I'm pretty excited.
Cool.
You got any hobbies, interests, things that you like to do to kill time other than writing?
Oh, yeah. Me and my family, we do a lot of things on the weekends, go to museums, parks, spend a lot of time together. When I'm not doing that, I, again, don't laugh, but I'm a big pro wrestling fan. I watch a lot of the AEW. That's my show of choice at the moment. I love playing Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, love movies, huge music fan. So those are the things that probably take up a majority of my time.
Wrestling, cool.
Yeah.
I watched wrestling in 30 years. I used to watch it, though.
Gotten a lot better.
I just got a note from Patricia Guthrie saying that she's having storms right now, bad reception and cutting in and out and stuff. So she's not going to try to call back. She was the one on the phone.
Yeah. Okay. Well, stay safe, Patricia.
Yep.
Keep your head down. Yep. And if they pass through before the end of the show, please call in.
Yeah.
And that goes for the rest of you listeners. If you've got a question or a comment, you don't have to just leave it on Twitter. You can call in. That number is 516-453-9902. 516-453-9902. And you can talk with our guest tonight, his name is Jason Gwynn. So, all right, cool.
So do we have a new caller? I've got a note here from you that we have another caller.
No, that was from, that note's from a while ago.
3 minutes ago, according to my phone. Okay, so how long have you been writing, Jason? I mean, we've heard about your stories at the age of 12. I mean, mm-hmm. When did you really get serious about writing for publication?
Well, that had always pretty much been my dream. I think most writers, I can't say all of them, some people just write for the passion of it or, you know, for therapy reasons. But for me, I always wanted to. I even tried to do the Vanity Press thing back in, you know, when I was still in high school. I would say I really started to buckle down. I moved to China because I had more free time and I didn't have all the pressures of, you know, living here. You know, I was at a university teaching, so I didn't have to pay for rent. You know, things were a little bit laid back. So it's just like, okay, first of all, I can't watch TV. It's in a foreign language I don't understand. I can't read because all the books are, again, in a foreign language. So there's nothing now to stop me. So I got on my computer. I remember sitting there for like an hour just staring at the screen thinking, okay, I'm going to write my first book, but what's it going to be about? And then I got this idea and I hammered out the book. It took about 2 years to get it done, multiple drafts, started to submit right after it finished and got, you know, tons of rejections. And instead of, you know, letting my dream die and feel defeated, I'm like, okay, that book's not doing well. Let me write another one. And then I wrote another and I've just slowly been building up the manuscripts. I think I've finished now six. I'm starting my seventh now, planning my eighth.
maybe even a ninth, because my ideas are just kind of, you know, simmering in my brain. It's time to get them on paper. So I would say probably 2002, 2003, I just decided to really just not just talk about it anymore. Let's just see what happens. So I've been writing pretty seriously since about that time.
And that coincided with you figuring out the new platform that you could do this through, Amazon?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely helps. The first book that's out there now, Holy Crap, it's out of print now. But that one, I published it kind of on a whim. I shouldn't have done it. I should have edited it and worked on it a little bit more. But it was just sitting on my computer. And I just thought, let's see what happens. And I published it. And once I saw how easy it was almost like a temptation. You know, it's almost too easy. So I decided my goal is to try to do the traditional way, find an agent, and the agent introduces me to, you know, a big publishing house and go that route. But it's nice to know that's there. Like my short story, The Fallen, after polishing it, spent a lot of time on it. That was nice to know that, hey, if I want to get it out there, I can just publish it. I don't have to search for an anthology or something to submit it to. So I love the fact that young writers or any writer of any age, I should say, you know, have that luxury and beauty of finally being able to release their work without being restricted by, you know, the bigger publishing houses or the frustration of finding an agent. So yeah, Amazon's been awesome.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about this, you know, publishing through Amazon and not being restricted and all that. And you had mentioned younger authors. We had an author on here, a few weeks ago, Sally Cronin, and she spoke about her father or grandfather. I think it was her father had published his first book at like age 81 or 82.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I mean, I'm pretty sure it was her. Yeah, she was our guest that we had that called in from Ireland. And
oh, cool.
I mean, so this is, you know, we got the world at our fingertips. And it doesn't matter what age you are, if you,
right,
you've always wanted to write a book, now's the time.
Definitely.
So what's your writing process like? Do you work on outlines? Do you develop character sheets? Do you put a lot of pre-legwork in, or you just start writing and see where it goes? How's it come out?
The last four manuscripts has been all by the seam of my pants. You know, I might get an idea, or I have a scene in my head, and I just want to get it on paper. And that scene will lead to the next one, to the next one. But I find now that if I do it that way, I get stuck in the editor mode. You know, I got to refine the scene. I got to fix the scene. Or I'm sure a lot of your listeners will understand this. You have that great intro. You got the first part of the book done. You're like 60, 70 pages in. And then you hit that wall. It's like, oh, no, I don't know where to go next. And that has happened on every book that I've written up to this point. But my current project, I decided to outline it first, just to try something different. So I outlined the first, I don't want to say first, but the three major portions of the novel. I don't have the last one outlined or the last section outlined yet, but I got the first three done, so I know exactly where I'm going. And I've noticed now, I've been working on the new book now for about maybe 2 months, and I'm already 9 chapters in. I'm going strong, and I like that feeling. So I might try to structure the books a little bit more now than what I used to do. So I've done both. But so far I'm enjoying the outline because at least I know what to write next. Or if something's stuck, I know other chapters and when what needs to be written, so I can jump around a little bit more freely than if I'm trying to make it up as I go along.
All right.
Yeah.
We got a couple of questions on Twitter, Beam. Marlena Smith's asking, having visited different cultures, have those experiences ever helped in your writing or encouraged any ideas?
You would think, you know, when I was living in China, learning the Chinese mythology and stuff like that, I have some ideas stirring in the back of my mind that I might touch on later. My wife wants me to write the book of what it was like for me living in China, as a Lao Wai, as a foreigner, and our relationship and how that bloomed. But I don't know if I want to write that yet just because it's so personal and it's, you know, exposing a big part of my life that we try to keep kind of out of the media and out of the public. So yeah, some of it does, like I understand, and it helps me, I think, understand my characters better. more empathetically, especially if I'm trying to write a character that I have to be a little bit more intimate with, because I had to get to know myself and really understand who I was living overseas, because I had nobody to talk to outside of my family and my little circle of friends. So it hasn't really inspired a lot, but it might. You know, there's ideas stirring in the back of my mind, so who knows? Maybe my next book will be about, you know, the Monkey King or some Journey to the West-style comedy. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, you know, you can always write those personal stories, mm-hmm. the ones that you don't want to necessarily share, you know, that are based on your real life, but fictionalize them. You know, you change the name.
Yeah.
Add in some different stories that, you know, maybe didn't really take place, and mix it with the stuff that mm-hmm. really did take place.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe I'll do something like that. Keep some of my secret.
So, Beam, you want to run another commercial and then go
well, how about
a question on Twitter?
Or you want to do a commercial before the next question?
Yeah.
All right. We can do that.
Aspiring young Chinese immigrant, GGO, survives by working as a stripper, but she strives for true success in the U.S. real estate industry. Navigating this highly competitive business is tough, especially when her only support comes from the deeply flawed man she loves and her old cohorts from the strip club. Issues of betrayal and trust, loyalty and commitment complicate her goals, even as one lesbian friend adds new dimensions to her understanding of love versus desire. Then the market crashes and financial turmoil threatens to rob GGO of all she has achieved. Can she find new ways to chase her dreams and still manage to keep her clothes on? Or might she find a better reason to take them off? Girl Wears Those Shoes is a tale of love and power. The story of one woman who wants to make the world her own, if only she can figure out how. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Girl Wears Those Shoes is available in all hardcover, softcover, and all digital formats worldwide.
All right. Yeah.
Audiobook coming soon.
It's coming soon. I'm hard at work on that one. So you want to read the comment or you want me to read this?
Go ahead.
All right. Joe Conjo on Twitter. He says he's got a question. Jason, since you're into gaming and writing horror, do you think you will try writing a Gamelit book? Good question.
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry. I missed part of that.
Okay, Joe Conjol, he says, Jason, since you're into gaming and writing horror, do you think you will try writing a game-lit book, game literature?
Oh, probably not. I think anybody who games, especially Dungeons & Dragons, and you go on those great adventures, because I'm normally the DM, I've always thought about, you know, writing down the adventures I took my people on or my players on, and it's just like everybody does that, especially in fantasy. A lot of fantasy authors, especially the DM type of authors, tend to do that. And I might use some of the fantasy elements if I do, because I've played in the fantasy genre just when I'm messing around at home. So it does play into it, but I don't know if I'd ever go 100% into like a gaming literature style.
Okay.
I wonder if that would be considered fan literature, since you'd be using somebody else's trademarked and copyrighted worlds and characters and all that kind of stuff, presumably without permission. And
yeah,
I'll bet there's a lot of that out there.
Yeah, there's a very fine line with it. But in the world of fantasy, you know, orcs, goblins, fairies, wizards, I mean, it's all, I don't know
generic.
If it's called free domain, but it's all out there, you know, for such a long time. But yeah, you'd have to be very careful with that.
Right.
So you're writing. Do you have a certain place that you do it every day? You know, do you set goals? So many words. Do you face east? Do you chant and burn incense? I mean, what's your method? What's your style? What's it look like when you're hard at work?
Well, I sacrifice a few small animals, and then
hairy ones, I hope.
well, usually what I do is, since I'm a dad, I wait till my kids fall asleep. And then I grab my laptop and I grab a cold water and I sit on the couch and I write usually before I go to bed or do editing if it's not flowing well. And my goal was always keep it at 500 words. That's kind of my goal. It's about a page a day. But if I feel inspired or
it's going really well, I might write a little bit more, but I don't want to give myself unrealistic goals. So I always keep it about 500 or at least write steadily for about an hour and then see how I feel after that. And now that I'm changing jobs and I've been working a lot, you guys might hear my voice sounds a little hoarse because I've been training these last couple of days. I might just open my computer, write a sentence, and go to bed. So it kind of depends on what's going on. But, yeah, I do try to write every night.
And then do you share that writing with anybody? You use beta readers? You have editors? Anybody that gives you feedback? Or is you just kind of a solo effort?
It's mainly solo for the most part. I don't let anybody read it until it's at least until maybe the second or third draft. If I'm really proud of something, I'll post it on Twitter. Or I might post it on Facebook. But I'm not a big social media type person, so I don't do too much on there. But usually it's just for myself, and I am part of some writers groups. But since the COVID hit, I haven't been able to go out as much as I would like to spend time with them. But usually solo, but I do have a few beta readers that I'm pretty close with, friends who have been reading my work all the way to my first publication, that Holy Crap book, back in 2015. So I have my connections, but I would love to get more. You know, I would love to read other people's work, you know, work cohesively, cooperatively together. You know, you read mine, I read yours. I'm always looking for more authors to work with. So if anybody listening needs, you know, a beta, I'll be your beta if you be my beta. Let's be beta together.
Wear protection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So
wash your hands when you're finished.
So what's going on? What's your assessment of the state of horror today and books in general? What do you think of the industry?
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to say that I think it's finally taken a turn in the right direction. You know, there for a while, I was really worried because first the big chains, the big, bookstores, they changed the format. You know, then they started listing all the books by author. And if you didn't really know who you were looking for, it was really hard to stumble upon a horror novel. That's why I do a lot of my shopping at Half Price Books, because I have a horror section and I can find new authors really easy. But now I've been to Barnes & Noble, at least here in Texas. They're bringing back the horror section. They brought back the fantasy. They brought back the sci-fi sections. And now it's just amazing because you can stroll along, you know, that section and look at the covers and see the cool titles and grab them and be like, wow, I never heard of this. I want to give this a try. So I love that. And I think indie horror has recently really exploded. Like I'm friends with a lot of indie authors online and just seeing, you know, I'm friends with an independent horror filmmaker in Odessa, Texas, named Jake Perry. He has a new movie coming out called Tapeworm Z. If you want to look into that, he does horror.
Tapeworm Z.
Really good. Yes.
Cool.
I just remarked, we needed more tapeworm movies.
Yeah. That comes out in August, I think he told me. But it's just awesome to see these guys coming out with, they're really changing the industry from, you know, the outside in, kind of like a tapeworm, you know, eating its way out of your butt. But I think the area where horror needs to be revised or revisioned, I think, is in cinema. Now, most of the time, it's legacy horror where you're bringing back, you know, like Texas Chainsaw, they brought back the main character from the first one to fight him, you know, or, you know, Michael still fighting Jamie Lee Curtis, and it's been how many years, you know?
Well, man, 42 years.
Yeah, it's just, come on. And they fought in the early 2000s, you know, in H2O. But it is kind of cool to see, like, right now there has been kind of a movement for the indie horror scene, especially not in just literature, but in film where, you know, the Baba Lee Gook or Heredity or, you know, some of these more artsy films are finally getting recognition, like X, you know, things like that. And it's not just Candyman remake, Evil Dead remake, you know. If we had this talk last year, I would say horror is almost dead. But I think now there's fresh life into it. So it's really exciting to see what's going on in the world of horror.
Yeah, Heredity was exceptional. I saw that in the theater and it's just like, wow, you know, that's a whole different take, so to speak. I mean, that went, I thought that was moving it in the right direction.
Yeah, it kind of had like an Exorcist feel to it, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't just jump scares. It was an atmosphere with a build, great character.
Steady building tension throughout that whole.
Mm-hmm.
You just knew something was going to snap.
Yes.
Just didn't know when. Now, who does your book covers?
The one that did the book cover for The Wretched, it was my design idea. My publisher gave me his cover idea, which was fine, but it was just a skull with some paint on it. It kind of looked like something from Cinco de Mayo, you know, and I thought that would give the wrong impression of the book, you know. So I wanted a pentagram. I wanted all these, like, satanic or what is considered satanic imagery, but to play kind of a parody on it. And so I came up with a rough draft of it, and I sent it to my high school buddy, Shane Stanley. He's a street artist in Greenwood, Indiana. Oh, no, he moved. He's in Indianapolis, Indiana. And he's looking for work. If you actually go inside the cover and if you like his designs, you can reach out to him. He does covers for books. And I gave him the idea. I'm like, hey, would you design this for me? He's like, dude, that's awesome. Yeah, I'd love to. So I've been using him for almost all my covers, with the exception of my short story, The Fallen. That one I found on, like, Shutterstock, I think. But, yeah, I use my buddy from high school, and he's really good.
Hmm. Yeah,
so what
cool.
is The Wretched about?
I don't even know how to describe it. I think that's why it was so hard for me to find a publisher for it. It's some people say it's bizarro fiction, but I would say kind of like what you said, it's the supernatural horror comedy. And the idea for it kind of came to me when I was a lot younger, maybe when I was 12 or 13. The initial idea was set in my brain. And it was the idea, as someone who goes to church, you know, we learned very early on that, you know, through Jesus, you can find forgiveness, right? Anybody can be forgiven of their sins if you come with an open heart and you really want to be forgiven, right? I always thought that was really interesting. It's like, so anybody can be forgiven if they really seek it and they really want atonement for their sin. That's really interesting. And then as I grew up, you know, I became a big fan of true crime. And, you know, a lot of these people, like these mass murderers or robbers or rapists or whatever, when they get to prison, a lot of them find God, right? And they become born again. And then in my mind, I'm just thinking, okay, so, like, for example, Jeffrey Dahmer, the cannibal from Minnesota, right before he was killed, he became a born-again Christian, right?
Yeah.
He was going to mass all the time, converting other inmates, really turned his life around in prison. But if we go by what it says in the Bible, since he converted, he sought forgiveness, does that mean he's in heaven? If he got to heaven and he's with his victims, what do they think? You know what I mean? So it was this weird concept of what is forgiveness? Can anybody truly receive forgiveness? And if so, what's the price of receiving that redemption? And so The Wretched, in the book that's going to be the sequel for it called Heathens, which I'm outlining right now, is a book basically about the atonement or forgiveness of Lucifer, in the sense that he's basically banished from hell. He gets cast on earth, and it's the only place he can be destroyed. And he's cast out because his wife, Agarat, is basically fed up with him. He's a loser. She's tired of supporting him. So she works with some demons on earth to get him murdered, right? But he's saved by God, by divine intervention, and God basically enrolls him, you know, to purge the earth of evil. Since he's the one who made it, he knows where all the evil powers of evil are located. He can wipe them out, right? So he's kind of recruited to do this. And, of course, he doesn't want anything to do with it. He's fighting, and I'm not doing this. And he gets a ragtag group of fighters to join him. You know, you have Adam. You have Lilith, who in some Judeo-Christian mythologies was the first wife of Adam. You have a hitman. You have a witch. But you get this ragtag group of people all fighting for their own redemption. And, you know, it's just action, adventure, a lot of comedy, a lot of character interplay with each other. And I just wanted to see, first of all, would a reader base really be able to get around these characters, because they're basically evil, but they're fighting for justice. They're actually fighting for good. So it's kind of a moral play for the reader to see if they will support this cast. And at the same time, just to talk about the struggles of trying to find forgiveness, because every character has their own sin that they are fighting against internally. And eventually Lucifer will, at first he doesn't want redemption, you know, he's just doing it to get back to hell so he can reclaim his kingdom. But as the series goes on, I'm aiming to do three books. He slowly starts to turn, and by the end of it, he becomes the angel of light again. So that's kind of the story. Yeah, so it's an all a play on the idea of forgiveness.
Now, as I just started reading it, so I'm a chapter into it, and but the way you're describing it, it's was this inspired by Clive Barker in any way? Because it's very Barker-ish.
Well, I'm very honored that you would say that. As a Barker fan, I'm not worthy. You know.
Barkerific.
I wouldn't say it was really Barkerific. Yeah. The idea, actually, it was really interesting earlier. You guys were talking about point of view books. When I was in university, we had to do a point of view exercise, you know, playing with first person, second, third person limited, and third person omnipotent or omniscient.
Omniscient.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
And basically, the idea our teacher assigned was, okay, you have to have two people having a conversation. We were going to tell it from different points of view. So my idea was to put Lucifer with Jesus in a Taco Bell. And so the first part's all from Jesus's point of view, listening to Lucifer, who's a braggart, and he's, you know, talking all the smack to Jesus, and Jesus is just eating his burrito, you know, yeah, man, like, yeah, I hear you, you know. And then the second point of view is from Lucifer and, like, what he's thinking. Then we go to the third point of view of a person sitting at this diner looking at these two people, like, am I really seeing what I'm seeing, you know? And that kind of set the groundwork for it. I just always loved that interaction I had with those two characters. And so that was kind of the catapult to the book. But that, you know, I don't write any ideas down. I just let them simmer in my brain, because eventually they just bubble to the surface with, you know, other muck and goop attached to it. And that is my story. So that is where the foundation began. And I think as I got more into true crime in my later years, seeing these parallels and about forgiveness and, you know, as a Christian too, the moral play that's involved in there, I just felt like that would be just a perfect combination. And I remember I went to a book event, and my book's on this table, and I got so many dirty looks. I had one Christian woman start yelling at me about the topic. Lucifer can't be forgiven. You can't say that. That's blasphemous. And I'm like, but we should have this conversation. And forgiveness is for everybody.
Yeah, and you're writing fiction. Yeah. And that's the thing.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Writing fiction. And people need to separate that look, you're a storyteller. You're just telling a story. You're
exactly.
Not saying, hey, guess what? I've written a new gospel.
Yeah, exactly. This is not gospel at all. It's just a fun story with a challenging idea with really crazy characters going on, you know, these action-packed adventures through hell. They fight on earth. The next book's going to have a part with war in heaven and more demons. And, you know, it's just a wild ride is the best thing I can say about it.
Can you predict when the second one will come out?
I'm going to try to hammer that out once I'm hopefully done with this current work in progress. So I would say maybe in 1 or 2 years, but I'm hoping to get it done sooner than that. But it's a much larger book than the first one. Like, if you hold a copy of the book, it's only about, 296 pages, which seems very sad, because when I was writing it, I'm like, man, this book is so long. And then it got printed, and I was like, what? That's it? Okay. The next one's going to have a lot of stuff, more characters, a lot more mythology thrown in. The new book will have vampires in it. There's going to be a kaiju kind of monster in it. A little bit more romance in this one. A lot of chaos. So I'm planning it to be a massive, massive undertaking, which is why I'm kind of putting it off, because I don't want to dive into it too quickly, because the first book was such a mental exhaustion in terms of doing all the research, the rewrites, going to my writers groups, getting all this beta readers and feedback and fixing this and fixing that. And when you're writing this type of stuff, you know, researching demonology and, you know, criminals and all that kind of stuff, it kind of leads you to a dark place. And writing the book, kind of, I don't want to say made me depressed or anything, but it definitely brought me down a little, which is why I decided to do a YA novel next and this really fun one-off comedy that I'm doing now. But I'm just purging myself, cleaning my palate a little bit before I jump into the next one. But the next one should be epic.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that. The book, The Lovely Bones, okay, that's a very dark story. And when they turned that into a movie, Stanley Tucci played the killer in there. And mm-hmm. I remember him talking about that character was so dark and it just made him depressed and just feel blah.
Yeah.
He said his next project had to be a comedy. So his next mm-hmm. movie was The Devil Wears Prada, which was a comedy.
Oh,
he said, because that was the only way to, like you just said, to cleanse his palate, to get out of that
yeah.
dark frame. So, I mean, that's,
yeah.
you know,
and
that's the way it is when you're writing this stuff
right.
or when you're acting in it.
Yeah, and like for the new one, the sequel, Heathens, this could be a spoiler, but that's okay. It's my book, right? it's part of it is loosely based on this, you know, what's his name? Epstein and the Epstein Islands and what supposedly may have gone on there. So I've been doing a lot of research for like 3 years now just about the island and all the rumors and possible things that could have happened there. And that's where the finale will happen in the next book, is this fictional island kind of based on that darker reality. And just doing the research for that, I mean, it was so depressing and, you know, so numbing to hear all these stories and reading all the accolades of possibilities that may have occurred there. And it's just like, okay, I need to step away from this for a little bit before I go crazy. Now that it's been about 2 years since I've started doing the research, I think I'm ready to finally jump back into it. So, yeah, that's another reason why it's taken a while. It's just the scope of the next book is going to be massive and the material is a lot darker. So I'm trying to find that balance between epicness, darkness, and humor. You know, so I'm trying to get that comedy side back into the mix.
With a little bit of Barkerific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Joe Conjul on Twitter, he's got a question for you, Jason. He says, Jason, do you have a favorite comedy horror movie?
Oh, those are my favorite kinds. That's tough. I'll give you three. My favorite horror comedies, number one of all time, has to be Ghostbusters. I absolutely adore that movie, and I've seen it way too many times. Second one would probably be Return of the Living Dead, 1985. Love that movie. Fantastic. And I pay homage to that in my new book that I'm writing now. I would say between Evil Dead 2 and maybe Shaun of the Dead. Or American Werewolf in London. That would be another really good.
What about some of the Freddy Krueger stuff? Freddy Krueger was a stand-up comedian half the time. The guy had some funny one-liners. Want to get high?
Yeah.
When his needles,
yeah,
his fingers
I mean,
are all needles, want to get high?
Yeah, I mean, I love Freddy. Don't get me wrong. Nightmare on Elm Street 1,
that
the Dream Warriors are probably my favorite ones. And I'd never seen part two until just recently. And I just thought, wow, this is actually not that bad. It's not a good movie, but it's actually very entertaining. I love the idea. And the reason why I do horror comedy is because it's great to scare your audience or give them that thrill, that rush, then make them laugh to relieve that tension a little bit. And then you hit them again when they're not ready for it. And that balance of humor and horror or suspense, because my novel, I would say, is more suspense, you know, supernatural elements to it, but just trying to walk that thin line. And, you know, horror movies is a great place to do that. Like one of my favorite horror comedies, I guess you can call it, is like Friday the 13th part 4, you know, part 6, you know, because they do it so well. You're laughing 1 minute and then you're, oh no, don't get that guy killed the next. And American Werewolf in London does that really brilliantly as well. Or Innocent Blood. I mean, that's such an amazing talent because those are two hard things to write. Right. Comedy is very subjective. Like some of the people listening to this might go, oh, I'm going to buy Jason's book. It sounds great. They buy it and they're like, man, this is not my sense of humor. You know, this isn't going the way I want it to. But other readers will read and go, man, this is a really funny book. And the same with horror. I mean, what scares you might not scare me. Like I'm afraid of spiders, but maybe you're like one of my friends is afraid of birds. My daughter's friend's afraid of butterflies. You know what I mean? So everybody's afraid and laughs at different things. So I love trying to combine that in my work. You know, again, scaring you 1 second, making you laugh, making you worry the next, laugh, and then hit you again. You know, it's just that constant roller coaster ride.
Well, I wasn't asked, but I got to go with Young Frankenstein.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
Young
a great comedy.
Any Mel Brooks movie is fantastic.
It's comedy, it's horror, and it's spoof. With
and it's Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter Boyle is Frankenstein.
Peter Boyle, Marty Feldman.
Oh, yeah.
There's that scene where he's, you know, he's talking to him and the hump on his back is on the other side, and yeah. Yeah, was like, yeah. Wasn't that on the other side? He's like, ah, never mind.
And I like it in whenever they say, oh, I forget the woman's name, but the horse will scream.
Oh, yeah, Madeline Kahn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, it was Terry Garr was Frank and yeah,
Terry
Garr. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
So Jason, wow. Sell us The Fallen. Why would we be interested in buying a copy of that and reading it?
Sure. The Fallen. Okay, the original idea of The Wretched was I wanted to do my own, you know, literary universe where everything's kind of connected. So if you have this war in heaven going on, and there's a war between, you know, good and evil on earth, that's going to cause, you know, things to change. And I thought, oh, why don't I kind of make it like my own Dark Tower, which is probably my favorite book series of all time by Stephen King. Maybe it was too ambitious of me to even consider this option. But The Fallen is in the same universe as The Wretched, but it would take place in between book one and probably book three. And it's more straight up horror. This one doesn't have the humor in it. It's designed to put you on ease. It's disgusting. It's vile because there's possession in it, and it's just a lot, I don't know, more traditional horror than The Wretched would be. And one reason I decided to publish it was I was just wanted to challenge myself because I don't write a lot of short fiction. My stuff, once I get going, tends to become bigger and bigger as I write. So I really wanted to challenge myself to write and construct a standalone short story. And and I wrote it, and I got it out, and I was really happy with it. My beta readers that read it really enjoyed it as well, because it was really creepy, which was my goal. I wanted to make the reader feel uncomfortable. And I will warn readers, if you do get it, it has a vague open-ended ending for a reason, because it ties back into the main storyline of The Wretched. But the answer will come later, just so you know. But I didn't want everything wrapped up in a nice bow at the end. I wanted it a little vague. And it almost got picked up for an anthology release about, I would say, like maybe 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, because it's a little bit older. But they wanted me to change the ending. And I was like, but the ending is perfect the way it is. That's the way I envision it. And they're like, no, you need to wrap it up. It needs a resolution that makes sense for the story. And I'm just like, but that's not the story. I can't do that. And so it was rejected from the anthology. And it was just sitting around, and I just thought, you know, why am I not sharing this with people? Let me edit it again, get a couple people to read it over. And, you know, like you said earlier, Amazon, just click it, and it's there. And to my shock and surprise, it went all the way up to number 11 on Amazon. And I was just blown away by that. And whoever bought it and read it, I really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for the support. That's basically it on that one.
So have you had any interaction with fans, any great reviews that struck you or met anybody or got any letters or anything?
I haven't gotten any letters or packages. If you want to send a package, let me know. I'll give you my P.O. box when the show's over. I don't want to say I have a lot of fans, but the fans I do have are awesome. If you guys are listening, I appreciate it. The best thing I ever heard from a fan, his name is Steven, and I hope he's listening. He read my first book, the Holy Crap book, and, you know, it was a limited run. It didn't sell a lot of copies or anything, so I took it down after a while. Plus, it needs to be polished. But one night, Stephen, I'm at home, he hit me up on Facebook, and he was just like, hey, I bought your book. I read it, and it was really powerful. It really moved me. It made me think about religion in a way I never thought, and it's the best book I think I've ever read, and I really wanted to let you know that.
Wow.
And it was the first time a fan ever reached out to me, and his words were so kind. I was like, oh, man, thank you so much. So now I try to send him free copies when I can. And once the stupid virus and the lockdowns are all over, conventions are starting to open up again finally. I hope I can meet him somewhere and, you know, treat him for dinner or something. Because he doesn't understand how much those words meant, especially when you're struggling.
Yeah.
Any writer out there knows you're not getting reviews. You just don't know if your book is good. And then you start doubting yourself and – you might give up, you know. Every review I've received, even the bad ones on Amazon, I think I have almost 100. I think I'm at 94. I read all of them. I cherish all of them. If you think I suck, but at least you read my book, and I appreciate that you took the time to do that. I can't wait to get back out there. I've done some conventions right before the virus hit, And I had a lot of fun interacting with people. So hopefully that can continue moving forward. So, and I'm hoping if I get this next book out, I can be introduced to another whole new fan base and meet them and interact with them. Like I said, love me or hate me, I just appreciate you take the time to interact with me, or, you know, take the time to even read my book. I mean, that just touches me so much, because I know, you know, today's age, everybody's so busy with work, or there's a billion distractions. You know, you have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, the new movie just came out, my new game came out, you know, I got 160 hours in Skyrim. You know, there's so many distractions, and I just thank anybody who spends, you know, even you guys, if you just read that one chapter, I am so honored that you took the time to read just one chapter. So if any of my fans are listening, thank you guys so much, and talk more with me, you know. But I'm not, again, you guys are probably asked, where can you find me on social media? I don't have a big social media presence, because when I am free, I don't want to be on there so much. I'm more in the writing side. But, you know, just look me up on Facebook under Jason Gwynn, and you'll find me.
Cool.
Well,
do you have any...
Good thing that Stephen did that, though. You know, we're always preaching about posting reviews, leaving reviews so that authors build that track record, get those star ratings, impress the retailers or whatever. But that personal touch of reaching out, sending a note on Facebook or whatever, that made a difference for you, because that was your first real contact, and it was reassuring. So I say forget dinner, buy the guy a car.
If I could afford it, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. I think go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to encourage, you know, especially for us indie writers who are trying to get our name out there and just get a little recognition, even for some peddly sales, you know, leave those reviews, because there's a lot of people, like, I've sold over 6,000 copies of The Wretches, and I've only gotten 94 reviews. And I appreciate every review, like I'm saying, but a lot of people who read books don't understand how much that really means to someone, especially for an indie author. You know, Stephen King for a book will have thousands of reviews, but for us, even five means the world to us. And I think getting that praise or that criticism, like, we're growing too as authors, and maybe you point out something I missed. That even some, like, for example, I got a 2-star review for The Wretched. You know, I was like, oh man, 2 stars. But they actually gave good critique. And I'm like, yeah, he makes a great point. Maybe in my next book, I'll do that. And I actually have a revised copy, or my director's cut of The Wretched, that just came out last year, called the Boomstick Edition. And some of the stuff he said to me online in the Amazon review, I took to heart. I fixed it in the director's cut. So hopefully that person will give it a shot, because I listened to your advice. But yeah, anybody who is supporting local artists, buying the book is awesome, but the reviews also mean equally as much, if not more, because for Amazon, the more reviews you get, the more traction you get, which means more exposure. So show your love to those authors. If you really love their work, take 5 minutes or write a quick review. It means the world to all indie publishers or indie artists out there.
Definitely. Now, you've already told us how to find you on Facebook, and I want to stress, any guests that we have on this show, any listeners, if you're trying to track that person down to get a message or whatever, we have a contact form at freshinkgroup.com. We will always pass messages along, make sure that we can get people in touch with each other. So, awesome. Jason, it's been great having you on. We got one last question for you. You got some advice for authors out there?
I think for anybody, especially, I'm sure you guys know people out there who say, oh, you wrote a book, I'm doing that too, or it's been my dream to write a book. Don't just talk about it. You know, just really take the time, sit down, be realistic about your goals. Don't say, I'm going to write 3,000 pages a day, or I'm going to have the first draft done in 2 months or whatever. Because we all know it takes a lot longer than that. It takes years to really get a book polished. But for any young author out there, just believe in yourself. Get a nice support group. And not just a support group like your mom who reads everything, goes, oh, you're great. You're going to be amazing. You're like better than Stephen King. You know, that doesn't help. It's good to have that, you know. But you do need a circle around you that you can trust that will tell you this works, this doesn't, or give you the proper advice to really make your book shine. But get out there and write. You know, I would say write a little bit every day. Even if it's not flowing for your book, write something else. Write a short. Write a poem. If it's not flowing for me, I edit. You know, I'll go revise a scene, or maybe I'll read some writing books. I've read so many writing books. I don't read them much anymore now because they almost all sound the same with the advice. Take a master class. Master class is really awesome. I did the Peter – what's his name? James Peterson, I think that's it. I want to take the Neil Gaiman one at some point. Do a lot of reading, but really just get out there, sit down, turn off the distractions, and just write. If you're trying to do one of those, like I used to, like I was always called a panther, right? Just writing from the seam of my pants, whatever happens. And yeah, I can do that, but it takes 2-3 years to finish a project and polish it to where it needs to be. Now I'm trying outlining, you know, experiment, try some new things and listen to podcasts like this that give you advice and pointers about how to really grow as a writer and just write. You can't, you know, you can't pursue the dream of writing if you don't actually sit down to write. And that's the hardest part, is clearing your schedule. If it's just for 10 minutes or whatever, just to sit down and hammer on that keyboard for a few minutes, but just write anything. You know, if you're proud of it, post a little bit online so people can read it. But yeah, just write. That's all I can say is write.
That's
great advice.
Yes.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Jason.
We do have one more comment on Twitter that is from Verwayne Greenhall. He's just saying, thanks, Jason, Gwen, for taking the for talking with the Voice of Indie hosts, Steven and Beam. Good show. I enjoyed it. I hope to be home in time to listen to next week. Verwayne's been having some health issues, and we are thinking about you, Verwayne. You are in my prayers, and best wishes to you and Lisa as well. So
yep.
We hope to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for the comment. I hope you feel better.
Yeah. Now, remember, listeners, next week we're going to be doing Point of View, talking about, and I'll probably be spending some time on UPOVers, unintended point of view reminders, or unnecessary point of view reminders. So if you don't know what that is, then boy, you're going to want to tune in and learn about that. And then
as
also
you know,
next
Bob,
week, yeah.
Next week also, I will be, prior to this show, the hour before this, I will be on the Meet the Author podcast. That is a video podcast. It's going to be live with Rob and Joan Carter. So tune into that. As we said, the link next week, hopefully we'll have that in the newsletter so you can check that out. And after
June 8th, we'll be traveling. So we're repeating the Karen Ingalls Learning About Autism podcast, where her guest was Carol Tucker, who is one of the main subjects of the book, Learning About Autism. Carol Tucker raised an autistic child who she adopted and founded a school and developed some resources and did a lot of great things. So it's a terrific book, great discussion, and the woman who wrote the book and the woman who lived the life are both on the show. Since then, we've lost Carol Tucker, so this is an important repeat, and we'd appreciate it if everybody would check it out.
Yeah, June 15th, we have a return visit from one of our favorites, Mary Schmidt. She is a author. She's written a memoir. She's written children's books, and she's always a good guest to have on. So tune in for that on June 15th.
And then June 22nd, we've got Mark Schultz. We've known Mark for quite a while now. He's got some very cool how-to books and some stories and whatnot, too. So we'll get to meet Mark Schultz on June 22nd.
Yeah, so again, thank you, Jason, for taking time out of your Wednesday to spend it with us and our listeners.
Yep.
Yeah, so, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
So we're going to play one more commercial on our way out, and we look forward to talking about Point of View with you next week. Thanks, everybody.
See you next week, everybody.
Phil Lippert was thrown into the bowels of the Michigan Department of Corrections as a 17-year-old adolescent. He remained entrenched in a world of malfeasance for the next 40 years. With astonishing honesty, he reveals the raw details of what a life of incarceration looks like from the inside. His observations of human behavior and his stellar ability to tell a story reveal the courage and resilience of a man who has survived horrifying and savage injustice. Sometimes tragic, but often humorous and redemptive, Crimes and the People Who Commit Them offers a poignant collection of stories and miscreants and corrupt institutions, tales of men who have made poor choices and suffered grave consequences. Through it all, Phil Lippert displays a sly sense of humor and the quiet wisdom of a man who is, ultimately, a survivor. Lippert's journey has been one of an unrequited longing for freedom. Crimes and the People Who Commit Them is proudly published in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, available worldwide.
You've been a part part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.